I'm Christine Dean, and this is live from Studio A, and we are happy to welcome to our studios Timber Ghost, also known as Dustin Tessier. Welcome, Dustin.
Howdy. Thanks for having me.
How you doing? So I'm always a little perplexed when it's a project name and it seems like it's mostly just a person. Is there more of a band? I know you have people work on your album with you or.
Yeah. I don't think it's sort of nebulous at this point. It is a project that is very, I guess, me-centric. Mm-hmm. However, I've worked with a couple other musicians as a band for a while. Right now, it's just back to myself doing this. A lot of great people coming in to do the recording on the record that just came out. But I think it's purposefully not a specific moniker for a band or for an identity for me. I just kind of it's more of an open-ended art project.
I like that. Okay, that makes sense. You certainly are not the first person to have kind of a performance name
sure.
in that regard, you
yeah.
know, that sometimes involves band members and sometimes doesn't. And
yeah.
Well, and you also have a new album out. We'll talk about that in just a minute, but why don't you get started with a song?
What
do you
want
to start
Let's
with?
Let's do it. Coming down, coming down. Watch me fall. I've been. Too long. And there I go, weary and tired eyes, and I was mad. The breeze in the end, only wanted to be someone who could stay. When I walk, I wanna make a big sound. When I fall, gracefully. Thank you.
gracefully.
That's Timber Ghost live from Studio A, and I believe that's one from your new album, Life, Death, and Disintegration.
It sure is.
And that's a very cheerful album name you got there.
Yeah, cheerful album, cheerful songs, cheerful life, cheerful world.
Well, we'll get into all of that, but let's go back. So you're a Duluth native.
Yes, absolutely. Born and raised.
And you, I think I read you started playing on the local scene when you were like 13, or you started playing when you were 13 with bands or with your friends? Or
yeah, there were always instruments in my house when I was growing up, an acoustic guitar, some drums, some things like that. So I started banging around on that and making noise at a very early age. But I would think that I actually started making reasonable sounds probably around the age 13 or so. And then started playing in punk rock bands around the age of 15 at places like the Recyclobell, the Refinery Coffee Shop. What else was it? It was the Orpheum. It was the Urban Ground. And that band would have been called the Jiffy Toast Connection. The folks that go way back.
And I think I remember that name from back in those days. And how important was that to have places like that where underage people could go and play shows? And
well, I mean, it was eye-opening. It was world-opening. It was sort of a paradigm shift from being a bored teenager with very little resources, coming from a family with very little resources, to be invited into a world of resources was incredible. Made a lot of friends that way. I was always a very shy person, still am, but was able to kind of break out of that a little bit through connecting, through music. It was great. I mean, I'm sure we've both heard stories about people who come from towns that have nothing. This actually felt so like something vital was happening, and I was part of it. And we all were part of it, not just me.
Yeah, really nice music community, and nice that there were places where younger people could participate as well.
Does that still happen? Are there still all-ages deals here?
You know, I'm kind of old, so I think there's a lot of basement shows now, but
great.
I think some of our students would have a better
sure.
There still are places where all-ages shows can happen,
great.
But as far as that kind of scene, I'm not sure if it's as... I know it might be more basement-y now.
Sure, sure.
But that's still a perfectly legitimate way for people to see shows and take part in a scene.
There's a lot of houses, and most of them have basements. It's perfect.
That's true. And some of them have parents who don't mind if you rock out there.
That's important, too. I grew up in that household, for better or worse.
So the band was always welcome to practice there?
Yeah, they were always welcome to practice until it got ridiculous, as it often did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you moved down to the Twin Cities in 2002. How old were you then?
Doing the math, I think I must have been about, 23, 24,
okay.
or 25. I was up somewhere in there.
Okay.
Maybe 22. I'm not even sure at this point.
You were young.
I was younger. Yeah. And clearly math has not ever been my strong point.
So you moved down there, and
yes.
you got involved in music down there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you go down there in pursuit of more music opportunities, or did you just move down there for?
Well, it's sort of a multifaceted tale. But I went down there because I was in love with somebody who was going to college in St. Paul. And it turns out that it wasn't just for that. I was seeking an opportunity to sort of grow myself and to expand and to shake off the specter of growing up in a town like Duluth, which is beautiful and at the same time haunting. I think that this town is amazing and lovely and wonderful, and I think that the price we pay for being a native of this town or being a resident is there's a sort of heaviness that you carry, especially surviving the winters. So I moved for a number of reasons, and the relationship didn't work out, but the relationship with the Twin Cities did, and I've been down there since.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes think about moving back to town. Mm-hmm. And then I think about other things, and I get distracted.
So, yeah. Well, you know, things are going okay down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah,
why,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, for a while, I was playing, I was commuting and playing in bands up here still, playing with Teague Alexi and Ian Alexi. And it just, after a while, just kind of became, I'm absorbed into this thing here, down here now, so. Which was indie rock, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you had a band for a while, Laser Forever.
That's right, yeah.
And then kind of life just kind of broke that up. And
yeah, oh, man, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I guess I gave it a serious go with trying to hang with the musicians who were propelling themselves forward, and I think I had a number of demons to wrestle with, and I think ultimately in the end, addiction weighed heavier than aspirations, and unfortunately, that sort of took precedent, and it was a whole quest for identity, and it was the whole deal. It, you know, life falls apart, life comes back together again, some insight happens, growth happens, mm-hmm. life falls apart again. You know, the story of sort of. What it comes down to for me is extrapolating identity from who I am. You know, all the identities I could place on myself, whether they just kind of fizzle out or the bottom drops out. It's always a quest. And it turns out now, at the age of 40, identity is in the backseat. None of it matters. And then the thing that keeps coming back around is music. Mm-hmm. I tried to step away, went to college, got that debt, still working on that debt, slowly. But it was a worthwhile experience. People used to say back in the day, I'm getting my head together. That's what I've been doing ever since.
Well, and a lot of people never get to that point. So
yeah. And I'm glad that I'm at the point where I'm at and have a wealth of empathy to be able to offer to people. And, you know, I can't tell anybody how to do anything the proper way, but I can sure sit in the room with them and let mm-hmm. them know that, at least in the moment right now, they're going to be okay.
So you went through a addiction yourself, and you've come out of that. Well, I mean, I guess it's not something you ever completely, you know, come out of. It's a day-to-time sort of thing. And
here's where it's at for me right now. Mm-hmm. A recovery is sort of a journey. There's probably cliches to throw around that, but it's a development of a philosophy for me. Much like, I guess, life is, basically. But at this point in time, recovery isn't constrained to any philosophical structure that any movement has put into a book or any treatment center or any mental health center has kind of narrowed down. There's a lot of steps you can take and a lot of things, you know, poses you can do and postures and things. But what it comes down to is, for me, is really just having a healthy understanding of my relationship with substances, my relationship with my mental health, my ability to reach out to resources, and my willingness to. And so life is good. I know when I have struggles, and I'll tell you what, I don't drink alcohol anymore. I believe in harm reduction. And I am an impulse person. And where it is now is if I drive anywhere within 30 miles of a Casey's General Store, I have to get a slice of pizza. So it's on the scale of harm. This is way low. I believe in helping people develop their own philosophy. The reality is that people are going to have a relationship with substances. How can we ease them into a situation where maybe they consider reducing the harmful, you know, substances they use or whatever. You know, I didn't come here to talk about this.
No. Well, and the reason I'm just asking—it's
a part of me, though. It's inescapable for me. It's something that I feel like I'm being phony if I don't talk about.
Right. So, and whenever I have a musician in the studio, and there's personal stuff that they've talked about, and for me, it's like, how does this connect with the music? And you know, rather than asking in a what is that word, prurient? Is that a word?
Yeah.
In that sort of way, kind of connecting it to, because there's some of that in the music and on this particular album. And one thing that I found really interesting that you had talked about was how you used to just feel kind of, and correct me if I'm phrasing this wrong, but like jealousy towards people that were more musically successful than you. And that was something that you had trouble maybe coping with. And now it seems like you really have a very healthier perspective about what music is for you and what you're aiming for.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I would like to impart, that the filter of that jealousy, of that envy, was alcohol, was, you know, other substances, the whole deal. I could go through the whole list. But in any case, I was not able to really see that the only person holding me back, the only thing holding me back was the voices in my head telling me that I'm horrible and I'm terrible and to keep destroying myself. And I think that over the years, I've really come to understand that. And I'm fortunate to be one of those people that's like, I recognize that voice. That's me. You know, some people don't. Some people struggle with hearing voices, with schizophrenia, with bipolar, with, you know, any number of mental health issues. I still deal with that. However, I recognize at some point in time, there's a resiliency within myself that I hit on. Something, an insight happened, something happened, and I understood that, okay, I'm destroying myself, and I'm the only one capable of doing so, really. And so, through a number of years of meditating and this and that, and really being mindful, and always trying to learn and understand myself, and to my detriment, constantly being stuck in my head thinking all the time, come to a place where I don't know. I would have spun out of control even more if I would have been touring constantly back when I was in my early 30s or something. You know, I would have taken more people down than I already did that were around me. And now I'm just more. Yeah, I mean, I'm myself. I'm more at ease. I expanded my mind over those years and somehow managed to get a college degree. And again, I'm on that debt plan. I'm working on that healthy American student loan debt. But yeah, you know, life is good. That's what I want to say, is that life is good, you know.
And I think I read that you kind of work in the mental health field now. Do you still do that?
Yeah, you know, I've got sort of a tenuous connection to it.
Okay.
It's part of my journey is realizing how much I have to offer and when I sort of become an unhealthy piece of the mix. And it's kind of a hard realization to come to, like, I thought I could do this thing. And it comes back to that identity thing, what I was talking about, like the identity of, oh, I'm a helper. It's, yeah, but, you know, to what degree do I feel that I have what it takes to sit behind a desk and be a counselor or what? You know, I don't see myself working as a therapist and moving further along in that path. But what I do right now is that I basically work at a residential treatment center a couple days a week, and I spend time with people who are coming out of the hospital, who are coming out of incarceration, and who could really use community around them. And my job is to essentially have conversations with people and let them know, you're all right, you're going to be all right, we'll get through it, whatever's going on, we'll get you back into housing, we'll do this, you'll take your medications, hopefully you won't disappear and go get drunk and we won't have to call the police on you. Luckily, this place that I work for is also based on a harm reduction philosophy. So we know people are going to use. How can we help bring them back safely? You know. So in any case.
And the fact that you've been through a lot of it yourself kind of gives you some credibility, I would imagine, with people.
Yeah, I mean, it just helps me realize that, I mean, I try to do all I can. But I do have to be honest with myself and admit that I can't be involved in that full time because it... At the end of the day, it drains me, and I don't have. I'm not being honest to myself in pursuing the other things that that are the other half of my being, if not the other 3/4. I mean, you know, like I can be a person of help if I'm getting on, if I'm paid on the clock, or if I'm just out in the street and I'm encountering people. And that's sort of also the realization that's happened, is that empathy does not stop and start on the time clock.
And so music is one of those things that you've chosen to really make a focus and make time for. And so tell me about that process. So you did a first EP as Timber Ghost a couple years ago.
2016.
So at what point did you start writing songs again, or did you already – were you –
So I probably stopped playing music around 2011 or so, right after, as a matter of fact, things really fell apart. I went and did some treatment, was in a marriage, got a divorce. Luckily, both of us are living the lives we would have chosen to live back then, very happy in our separate paths. Have an incredible partner now. I don't know if she's listening out there right now or not, but I totally lost my train of thought. What were we talking about?
I was talking about asking you about getting back into music. When you kind of started working on that.
I got some student loans, and I was like, I need to buy a guitar again. I'd sold it for, to pay for tuition or something or whatever. I got a guitar, started strumming on it again. It had been a couple years. Eventually started playing in cover bands and kind of, poking my head out like a groundhog and getting out there and taking the risk again. And all the while started writing basically, little riffs for songs and things until that bloomed into, okay, I need to do something about this that's not just playing Black Sabbath songs or that's not just playing Thin Lizzy songs or something like that. So I went from doing nothing to playing in classic rock cover bands in that kind of morphed into still playing classic rock cover bands, but also understanding that, I've got something to say, and I think I can finally articulate it now better than I ever have been able to before. I can get to that, it's easier to strike that nerve now to really express through music, through art, And it's, I call it an art project because it's not only music, but it's conceptualizing sort of the mood of the records, the artwork, this and that. It's like a drawing together of all the elements. Even if it's not just myself, it's like standing back and looking at the, like, sort of a meta view of everything coming together is an art project. Traveling up here is an extension, and doing this radio show is an extension of the art project. It's about communicating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I was coming out of a dark place of not communicating, not even with myself, certainly not with anybody around me, into a place where I have to be open and genuine. And it's been great. It's been amazing, actually. I'll be honest with you. There's been a spirit that has pushed this project, this record specifically, something where it's like, have another miracle. And what, are you kidding? Yeah, and have another. Like, okay, good. Are you sure? Like, all right, cool. Yeah,
well,
it's been a lot of blessings, a lot of wonderful people out there, a lot of wonderful things happening. I'm not walking with my head in the clouds. There's still struggles. And so where I see that I am benefiting a lot, where I am seeing a lot of abundance, I'm realizing that it's imperative of me to represent people that maybe aren't being so well represented, maybe people that are struggling, maybe people that could use a little bit more visibility,
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear another tune, and then we'll come back and talk about some of the people that worked on the album with you, the
that
songs,
sounds good.
And
That's
some of that stuff. What do you want to do next?
What should I do next? I'll do a song called This Year, and maybe we can talk about it a little bit when I'm done here. The writing on the wall tales of wearing thin, flash of consequence, afraid to lose it all. Are you here? Can you hear me? Are you listening? Am I alone?
will come. And the wind is gonna blow, and the air is getting cold, like winter. You got a prayer, then you better use it. In the cold, cold night, you're on your
Timber Ghost live from Studio A, and another one from that new album, Life, Death, and Disintegration, which just came out a couple weeks ago, I think.
Exactly 2 weeks ago, yeah. On the 16th of November.
And you had a show down in the Twin Cities for it.
Absolutely did.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So what did you have to say about that particular tune?
Oh, well, I just wanted to say thanks, Alan, for singing harmonies. Alan Sparhawk, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. And in fact, at some point, he kind of gave you some encouragement, I think, when you started doing music again and said, do an album.
Yeah, I kind of, over the years, have learned to delightfully throw myself into situations I would have feared and still do fear. And saying, hey, very impressive person who I look up to, check out this very personal thing. And it was the demos for the Ledger, the first record. And what came out of that conversation was keep doing it.
Nice.
And also work on the vocals, which is a great piece of criticism to get from somebody. And so, you know, it was a good eye-opening experience to be like, oh my God, somebody believes in this thing, right? You know, it just helped with the momentum of it.
Nice. Yeah, and did you know Elf from back in the day?
I've known, going back to the Recyclabelle, since the days of Love's first record, I've always been a very, very reserved and hermetic and shy person, and so every time I encountered him in the early years, I was intimidated and scared and this and that. And
you also were probably a bit younger than him.
Like a handful of years, but not generations or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, a person who I've watched create amazing art. He and Mimi and the series of bass players all leading up to Steve now. Just doing very fine things and being incredibly warm people. Yeah. And so after getting that little boost of confidence and, that motivation to maybe share it with more people and actually maybe put out a record or two or three or however many, now it's come around full circle to like, I think I know what I'm doing. Do you want to help out on this? Do you want to maybe sing a little and want to do a little something on this thing? And it worked out with everybody's schedules. And I am forever grateful. and appreciative.
And other people whose names might be recognized.
Yeah,
Mary Bue, who was on the music scene for quite some time here in Duluth. She's now down in the Twin Cities. She's kind of pursuing music now, taking the dive back into full-time music, it sounds like.
Yes, yeah. I started playing music with Mary in the late 1990s.
Oh, okay.
Very part-time, sort of like contributing to recordings or doing a live. I want to say we played live together a few times, maybe back at the Amazing Grace. In any case, yeah, Mary sang on a song. She was all about it. She played piano, some very haunting, beautiful piano on the second song on the record called Alone. Who else is, let's see, my friend Wayne plays some saxophone, Al Church.
I like the sax. I just want to put in a shout out to the sax because, I think Al might have some of that, Al Church might have some of that on his record as well.
It's all over the place with Al. Yeah.
And I'm just, I'm kind of enjoying the comeback of the saxophone. I don't know if it's a comeback, but I've been noticing it a little bit more.
Yeah, I think people are sort of, people are realizing that maybe don't put loud guitars there. Maybe put a saxophone there instead. Maybe kind of ease back and let these... I mean, I don't know. The saxophone's an amazing instrument. Every instrument besides the guitar is an amazing instrument. So, it's like, why not let those be featured?
I say this
as a guitar player.
Well, speaking of instruments, you play a lot of them on the album as well, yourself, mm-hmm. don't you?
Yeah. The first one was all me. This one, the guy that engineered and sort of helped mastermind the record, Neil Weir from Bluebell Knoll Studios, said, "Are you a bass player?" in a very polite way. And I said, "Well, I can pick up the bass and play it, but if somebody else can do it better, please." And he said, "How about Chris Bearden?" And I thought, well, okay. I mean, if he would do it, that he's busy and amazing. And he's like, "Yeah, Chris will do it. I'll talk to him." And Chris came in and made a soulful, beautiful record out of this thing that was bassless to be without him. It was... And a very sweet individual, wonderful gentleman. Bass playing friends, you're all very good, but I was sort of dazzled by Chris's amazing playing in the studio. I'd seen him playing in bands for years, but it was just like, oh, man. And here comes a professional, just sits down and bloop. Yeah, it's...
And he's on your record.
Yeah, I mean, it only cost, several grand, but whatever. I'm just kidding.
But you also played drums and keyboards on here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Are those things that you've played much in the past? Like when you were growing up, you played some of that.
Yeah, I'm a drummer still, mm-hmm. and it sort of feels like... Actually, the first seed of this record started with a snare drum sound that I was hearing in my head that I was hoping to capture. And that spirit that I was talking about that drove this thing and still continues to, somehow pulled that sound out of my brain and helped implant it into Neil Weir's head and also into JT Bates, the drummer extraordinaire, who came in and kind of helped us find that and tune the drums and find the right snare drum. When you're like, are you reading my mind? I know you've probably experienced something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they were reading my mind. They perfectly... I shared some examples of like, check this out. What did these people do to get this? And through throwing enough stuff at the wall for a relatively short amount of time, we are all like, this is it. Oh, my God. Yeah, so... I do play drums, and I have great respect for many other drummers, and it feels like... the quickest way to communicate what needs to be said on the drums is for me to express it in the way that I would like to. Drums can be so unwieldy and really, I don't like to tell what people what to do. And in the live setting, it can be open to interpretation. But if I'm hearing something like, this is what I hear. This is what I hear. Please forgive me, other drummers. I'm just going to play the drums on this one. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, sometimes that's just what you got to do.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we have time for one more.
Great.
And so... What would you like to finish up with here?
I'm going to play a love song, but it's not going to be a love song where everybody gets mournful and weepy, which I consider to be the best love songs. It's not about the longing or the lack of love. This one is about the abundance of love. And it's also sort of a send-off to my beautiful dog, Gracie, who passed away. She was 12 and a half years old, had some cancer. I was writing lyrics and singing vocals while she was in the room. And I felt like... I could write another song that sort of contemplates, that contemplates loss, or I could look at her sitting in her spot in the sunshine out on the balcony and just understand that she's like, here, I'm in the moment. You need to come over here with me. you need to come out of the darkness and you need to spend a minute with me. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a send off to her and to various other people I've loved deeply in my life and continue to love. And it's called Empty Sky, and it's on Life, Death, and Discrimination. It's not Life, Death, and Discrimination. That would be a horrible title.
that would be.
It is Life, Death, and Disintegration, mm-hmm. which is a fair title. In any case, Empty Sky.
Timber Ghost, a.k.a. Dustin Tessier, live from Studio A, and another one from that album, Life, Death, and Disintegration. Well, thanks so much for coming in today, Dustin.
Hey, thank you. I really appreciate it. Very, very genuinely appreciate it.
Well, and thanks for sharing your story, and, you know, I think it helps other people when people, you know, are able to say, you know what, I've been there, and... Mm-hmm. Hey, look, I'm doing okay right now. You know?
Yeah, I mean, just to let people know that, like, no, love exists. You have worth and you have value. You might not seem like it. You might not feel it with any atom of your being, but maybe somebody else is feeling it, and you know, someday you might feel it for yourself.
And that thing that keeps floating around lately about addiction is it's about connection, and it's you know, not being able to connect, and that if people had more connection in their lives, that would help so much with, you know, some of the other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's a multifaceted issue, and connectedness is one. Spirituality is an issue, you know. Resources, love, abilities, all of it. Yeah.
And music is definitely one of those ways that we connect with each other. So thanks for sharing that with us today.
Yeah, I'm happy to. It's probably the only way I know to consistently how to articulate.
Well,
without fumbling.
Well, so it's great that you are back doing that. And what's next for you in that regard? What are you going to, after your show tomorrow, what are you going to be doing musically for the
Christmas
next?
Shopping? No. what I'm going to be doing is...
Oh, come on. Everybody's just getting your album, admit it. That's what I would do. If I were a musician, everybody would just get my album
out of the
for
bag.
Christmas.
No, I'm going to... I've been busy putting together a little tour for January and February. I need to kind of... confirm a couple more dates, and then I will do the social media blast about the Tim Ghost on the Road tour or something like that. I'll give it a cute name. I'll make some nice flyers. That's what's going on. I've already been writing songs for the next one. It's sort of a process that just works itself out. But I think that I'm already, you know, mindfully planning what the next one's going to be and I'm not planning so much as letting the ideas come to me. I'm being available for the ideas, and it's kind of exciting what'll happen next. So yeah, I'm just looking. I'm going to do some touring by myself. I'm going to be trying to get as much of the country aware of what's happening with Timber Ghost as possible. Asking for help every now and then from the folks who are established, and continuing to just find out on my own too what it's all about, and love it the whole way, and spend lots of money on gas.
Well, thank you so much for coming in, Dustin. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Christine.
Today's Live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Chris Harwood, John Hino, and Emma Gilhausen, with funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To check out upcoming guests or to listen to previous sessions, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs.